Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thugging like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Vogue, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. We off the cuff right now. You dig?
What's up? It's your boy Lil Yap from UNLV, bragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You hear me?
Tiffany Levine.
And this Queen Crazy, your girl, says a bartender.
And we're from
Sex on the Rocks podcast.
Alright, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip hop. Well, much love.
Alright.
Love y'all. This is Miss
Irisetti,
and you're tuned in to Off the Cuff, giving a shout out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey y'all, this is Stacey Lachey, giving a shout out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real deal hip-hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, what's shaking? Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh Design, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, uncut show on radio. The Guillotine Team, Off the Cuff, and yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clowns.
For the 69th time, I am Charlie Chaplin, resurrected in the mind. I don't gotta say shit, I'm closer to a mime. I don't even see shit, I'm closer to time. Yeah, goddamn, she was fine. Back in the day, she was mine. She had my back and the spine. Her only light was the lime. Dive right, yeah, she let her limelight. She wasn't gay, but she fucked a few dykes. The park when she first seen him fight, so turned on that she had to shower twice. Addicted to the life, the red, green, and white. Gucci flip-flops, she would always roll the dice. Plus her twin sister, now that's a paradise. Vegas for the weekends, you know they love the life. And now we going, she always hold me. And now we going, and now she feeling. She bring me up when I feel. Take me up when I feel. She bring me up when I feel. She take me up when I feel.
Name dropper, saying nigga, we didn't know that. I mean, fuck it, we all African, I'm straight from my
rap. Screaming Mesopotamia, first human nation. Mesopotamia, first civilization. Fuck all you racists, be civil in this nation. Fuck you till you free, babe, escape from the maze. White and black, night and day, optimist Michael Bay. Most of my psycho ways came from my Bible days. Most of my swag, though, came from my Michael days. See me in that white ghost, something like Michael's face. Would've took Michael's place so he could keep moonwalking. Y'all keep moonshining, I just move, y'all. You know the spoon in, I'm getting so good. When I get blue balls, you know that my mood's red. And you ain't letting me fall about me. Cock a trash talking, name dropper. Saying nigga, we the new black. I mean, fuck it, we all African, I'm straight from Iraq. Mesopotamia, first human nation. Mesopotamia, first civilization. Fuck all you racists, be civil in this nation. Fuck you till you free, babe, escape from the mason. The best things in life are not things. Life is so lucid, we control our own dreams. Sign your life away, put your name up on that paper. God comes first, but being fly is second nature. Standing next to angels playing trumpets, blowing devil horns. In perfect harmony, we forever sworn. So it's e-harmony, but through the porn. Where my dogs at? Where the guards at? Saying, nigga, we in the black. I mean, fuck it, we all African, I'm straight from Iraq. Screaming Mesopotamia, first civilization. Mesopotamia, first civilization. Fuck all you racists, be civil in this nation. Fuck you till you're free, babe, escape from the nation.
Say, nigga.
They hate that we here, I feel it, it shows. It's a trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. Highs and lows, I've been here before. They hate that we here, I feel it, it shows. It's a trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. I'm dying to live. Nipsey's vision was shown. This is a victory lap. And I was just watching the throne. It just goes on and on. Running this marathon. If you love me, just love me. Till the drugs is all gone. Highs and the lows, I've been here before. The hate that we hear, I feel it, it shows. It's a trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. Highs and the lows, I've been here before. The hate that we hear, I feel it, it shows. Trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. Highs and lows, there'll be blood, moving the oil, pandemic flow, chisel the stone, look at my dome, think out the box, say that I'm chose, feeling like Moses. Don't hit me with text, babe, just hit me with poses. She used to the high life with low life, just feeding her doses. And I finally feel like I made it far, the moment she's closest. And thank you for needing the bread, raise it up till we toast it. I feel like my mind is Steve, ayahuasca and DMT, spiritual high, we tweaking the frequency. I'm dying to live. Kobe's vision was shown. This is a victory lap. Highs and lows, I've been here before. The hate that we hear, I feel it, it shows. It's a trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. Highs and lows, I've been here before. The hate that we hear, I feel it, it shows. It's a trigger for them. Well, I'ma shoot down the ego, I give and they go. It's just how it goes. Highs and lows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What it do, man? It's your man, King Eric, and you're not tuning in to episode 394 of Off the Cuff Radio, where you get the dopest exclusive interviews, dope music, great content, and I've got my host, T-Mask, with the facts in the building. But before I bring him on, I want to send my condolences, my thoughts and prayers to the family of New Jack, Jerome Young. He passed away this afternoon. He was a good friend of ours, a very solid one. So rest in peace to him. We're going to keep pumping your memory in vain, my brother.
What it do, man. It's T-Max up in the building, Off the Cuff Radio, on our second of back-to-back, sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Core Financial, Dirty Basement Radio, and Buddy Boy Entertainment, along with Jesse's Boutique. And, of course, you know, shout out to our co-host in Australia, Sandman, H. and Chilla. Ooh, boy, I was not ready for that one, King. I had no idea, man. But yeah, man, I mean, you know, you never know.
Yeah, that was a blow right there.
You know, but that's one thing about it, King, is in terms of, you know, and we have said this so many times on Off the Cuff Radio, you know, there are guests that we've had as we approach 400 shows, and there are many guests, you know, many people that we know off the show as well. You know, New Jack was one of them. You know, you and him were, you know, good friends. And, you know, one thing about the vision that you had for this show is that no matter who the artist is, whether they're independent, whether they're major, one thing we want to bring to this show is always letting an artist know that they are appreciated, they are respected, and that we want to give them an outlet to, you know, basically talk about their life, their career, their hopes, their dreams, their aspirations. And tonight's show is no different because we have a very, very special guest. This man is one of the most wildly talented, imaginatively creative, one of the most thoughtful, one of the most genuinely gifted artists that we have had the pleasure of meeting. And we are so thrilled, we are so humbled to have him on, you know, for him to tell us about his creative journey in industry. And this man has a story to tell. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing on Hassan Kafaf, a.k.a. Hassan Thank God. What it do, man?
Peace, peace. How are you, brother?
Peace. What's going on with you, man? How are you?
Man, amazing. All is well. How are you?
We're good.
We're good, my man. Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. Hassan, you know, in terms of King opening it up with some of your select cuts, man, I mean, it's obvious that your talent is fluorescently, you know, just on some other type of glow, man. I mean, you have a real gift with this. And your story is of a very unique one in terms of where you're from, you know, how you found your way here, and, you know, how you hooked up with two individuals who are legends themselves. You know, I think, you know, one was born in Atlanta, but, you know, raised in Chicago, you know, and another dude, he's from Harlem, you know, a couple guys by the name of Kanye West and Dame Dash. I think you've heard of them. So, yeah, man, you've been in elite company, man. So, I mean, it's great to have you on, man. So, I guess without, you know, any further delay, man, I guess we go ahead and give the floor to you and just tell us a little bit about yourself. We got a couple of hours, so, I mean, let's get to it.
Man, yes, sir. God is good. Let's get to it.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you found your way into this culture called hip-hop.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to, like, start creative directing the show, but is there a way that the music cannot play?
Sure, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
I just have bad ADD, so it's either I talk or I rap, and I can't
understood,
do it.
Understood.
It makes you want to rap.
There you go.
Understood. We got a solid for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically, first of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate the the opportunity and the platform. Basically, my father was born in Baghdad, Iraq. His father was actually decapitated by Saddam Hussein when he was 7 years old. He was in the parliament pre-Saddam Hussein. So he's like government official and, you know. But when Saddam came in with the dictatorship, they basically like bodied a bunch of the government. And so my father and his 15 brothers and sisters basically, you know, and the mother basically became political refugees, and they fled to Syria, Jordan, Lebanon. They lived in Egypt for 2 years and, you know, the whole thing. Basically kind of on the run, started living with the Kurdish people and all this stuff. So anyway, long story short, he came to America. My mom's American, and so that's a little bit of that. But growing up, it was interesting because my father being Muslim and my mother being like hardcore Christian Jesus junkie was definitely polarizing and interesting. But the irony is, I think I've learned more about Jesus through the Quran. You know, people don't realize Jesus is actually mentioned in the Quran more than the Bible. And there's actually a lot of similarities. Like, I grew up kind of believing, because I went to Christian high school and I went to Christian Bible study and stuff. And, you know, they will always teach you that Jesus is God. And never in the scripture does it say that. It actually makes it clear that he's the Son of God. And he even always said, you know, everything is through my Father. This is my Father's doing. And you can do the same and even greater than I through my Father. So I think that it's interesting that there's a lot of, but people want a lot of people all the time. You know, like right now we're living in this society of like cancel culture and like trying to demasculate the man and destroy the man. And the only way to rebuild the family is by rebuilding the man. And we have to stand up and stop being beta males. We have to become alpha males, and they hate alpha males, this society, because this society hates God. They hate family, the nuclear family, and that's why they hated President Trump, because he was an alpha male. And so they want to destroy alpha males, and we have to overcome the spirit of our mother. I realized that my mother turned me away from my father when they separated, and I took on my mother's spirit, and that gave me anger and hatred, because it's not normal for a man to be angry. It's not in a man's nature, because the man is connected to God, and anger and hatred is of Satan. So it's of the woman's nature to destroy. And so I took on my mother's spirit, and for years I kept dating my mother. I didn't realize it. I'm like, I keep dating my mom because I'm looking for mama's love, and I love my mother. But you become what you hate, in a sense. So I kept looking for mama's love and mama's approval. And that's like what nowadays, like I just saw Joe Biden and Kamala Harris say, oh, if you got your vaccine, now you can go out and play. It's mama. It's just like what mama would say, oh, you did the dishes? Now you can go out and play a little bit. And that's how they're conditioning us to keep seeking love from mama. And the problem is men have to realize that women have no love, and you can't seek love from women. You have to seek love from God and then give the love to the woman, so the woman gives the love to the children. That's the order of God. If you break the order, you will suffer. So for years, I kept seeking love from women, you know, through strippers and porn stars and everything like this, because I was making women my God. And that's what happened with Adam. Adam was the first Christ, because I'm almost done. Adam was the first Jesus, but because he was the first Son of God, right? But because he couldn't protect Eve from her thoughts, the devil came into her thoughts, and she made Satan her God, and then Adam made Eve his God and betrayed God and made the woman his God, and now we all suffered because he was a beta male. And so we have to overcome that spirit. And the beautiful thing about Jesus is he was never born of Mary. He was only born through Mary. but from the Spirit of God. So that's why he's Son of Man. In the Bible, it speaks that he's Son of Man. And I never understood that, but that's because he never had the spirit of his mother. So he never had to overcome that. And even in the scripture, there's times where he talks to Mary, like, in a very direct way. He's like, yo, it's not my time. Like, chill out. Like, you know, there's a lot of scriptures where he almost, like, reprimands his mother. He still obeys her, but it's an interesting dynamic. But, yeah, so he didn't have to overcome that, that we all have to.
Definitely, and I feel you on a lot of levels with some of the stuff you were saying, because especially when we look a lot of times in terms of upbringings we have, it can bring in terms of how direct influences come upon us, how we begin to formulate our own thought processes. You know, as you said about the alpha males, I've always been a proponent in terms of masculinity and the man, you know, being a man. Obviously, we're all on the same page about men don't wear dresses. We don't, you know, have purses. We don't do none of this. Like Dane said, we don't do that. You know what I'm saying? So definitely in terms of where we've seen things change in the industry, and not so much in the hip-hop industry, but just society at large, you know, where do you think all of this started happening where we started seeing, because at one point, especially with hip-hop culture, we were not seeing this in terms of some of the fashion that is going on now, you know, and obviously there is no need to name names out there. You know, on this show we speak about a lot of things, but we don't try to put anybody on blast. You know, anybody who listens already knows, if you know. But we've seen a lot of artists over the past few years. Well, fuck it. We might as well, because everybody sees it anyway, so it's not like we're tipping over the secrets. When we see artists like, you know, Young Thug wearing dresses, you know, even for a time with, you know, Young Jock when he was, you know, wearing a dress and then had a crazy-ass hairdo where he actually challenged Usher to a hair like challenge, which absolutely made no sense to me.
I've been coming through this way, but
yeah, where do you think a lot of this stuff started happening, Hassan?
I mean, I think that a lot of it came from you know, all this stuff is made up. Like even that last song that y'all played of mine before we came on, the highs and lows, I hate that song
right
now, because like all of that is made up. Depression, bipolar, anxiety. You know, this is not. This is all of Satan. And once you return to the Father, all of that goes away. The Bible doesn't speak about any of these things that now they try to sell us. Specifically, like a lot of like race hustlers, like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, these people. These are race hustlers that like they really don't care at all about people. They only care about making money off the problem. So the issue is that returning to the Father and all these isms will go away, like feminism, any of these isms, none of them exist. So we have to return to the Father and because the Bible speaks about we don't wrestle with flesh and blood, but with spirits and principalities. So it's a spiritual battle. And they don't want people to know that, because they don't want people to have to deal with the heart. So they deal with they put these names to it so it never ends. It's a never-ending thing when you don't deal with people's heart, because there's only good and evil. So, but that's a way for them to keep making money, because there's no money in the cure. There's money in the treatment. So, but as far as that, yeah, I just think that we have to return to the Father, and we have taken on our mother's spirit, and our mother has anger and hatred. It's not her fault. The spirit of Satan has taken over, has resided in her, and so it's not really her. She don't really know what she's doing, but because of Eve making that mistake, it's cursed all women in that sense. So we have to overcome the spirit of our mother and return to the Father. Like my father... My mother is actually my dad's father. No, my mom is my dad's mom, because he never overcame the spirit of his mother either. So he literally just dated his mom. And then that was my, that's my mom too. So we're actually, you know, so it's very interesting. But in that sense that there's no alpha, there's no leader. So there's no, you know, it turns everyone into betas, and it's a mess. And when everyone gets turned into betas, and now they're promoting it to say, oh, it's okay for men to tell their problems to a woman. Never should you tell your problems to your lady. That is an automatic, you know, because they'll use it against you, and they have no way to help you. So men are here to help women with their problems, not vice versa. So don't ever fall for the trap, guys. Don't ever talk about your problems with your lady. It will never work. And you have to lead. Women want you to lead. They're naturally followers. They're not natural leaders. So they need strong men to follow.
Now, one thing about it, Hassan,
Ego by me, my example.
Definitely. And I think as men, I do believe that a man, you know, should set the tone in reference to, because it is ordained to manly, you know, and from a perspective of, but I also believe in terms of the alpha mentality, that we do have a lot of individuals who claim alpha, because just because a man may be born a man,
those are males.
Just because you're a male doesn't mean you're a man.
Right, right. And you have a lot of these individuals out here who really don't understand what the essence of leadership truly means, which, you know, makes one an alpha. An alpha, for my definition, is a man who has a real understanding of what is going on, and the decisions that he makes is for the good of everybody around him. It's not just from avarice. It's for the advancement of the collective, not the avarice of the individual. And we have seen that a lot of times where people, because when you see, and it comes from no matter who you are, what color you are, political affiliation, we see a lot of individuals who will try to exploit people from their confusion, their frustration, their ignorance. And then try to use that, what's the word I'm looking for, disparity and that deficiency in order to lead, in terms of where we look at how people without proper instruction are led to destruction. It's like the blind leading the blind, in a sense.
T-Max, check this out. You know, building off that, I think that's where also it breeds another problem within society now. We're in a situation where we're dealing with pander culture, because they see now you say and appeal to beta male ideology, that's going to make your pockets line up a little bit fatter.
And I'm going to go there because obviously this dude put himself and his own shit behind it with Derek Jackson and the stuff that he was saying, because one thing about it is none of us are infallible, male or female. But one thing I did not like, and especially being black, and, you know, you're from the Middle East, you know, in Africa, as you said in your song, you know, Hassan, so we all identify with this as, you know, descendants of Africa, you know, having, you know, from the continent. We all have a feeling about this, because he was basically trying to say that essentially any situation that a woman has is not her fault. It's the man's fault. My thing is no. Because men can make mistakes and women make mistakes. And when we get into relationship factors, because this is not me bashing women because I love women, but I tell women in terms of where, especially we get into the relationship factors today of certain men that women choose, my thing is, you cannot say that there are no good, you know, men, especially black men around, but you will curb good black men, you know, for the thugs, for the hood, and then when something goes wrong, inevitably and imminently, because it does, because you're dealing with individuals that, like, you know, King and myself said before, they're not alpha. They have the allure of what alpha is in terms of moving on a sense of independence, which a lot of women like because they look at those individuals as having is what they call playing by their own rules. And I tell women this, be very, very, very careful about these guys that basically have no morals and no ethics and just do things just on a whim because they feel like. Those are not real alphas. These are just niggas that are irresponsible as fuck, you know, and you're going to get bought into it. You know, you're going to get bought into it eventually. It's also, and I also tell women this, do not get caught up in the maternal aspect of trying to change a man who has already been corrupted, because change spiritually, mentally, has to come from within. He has to be at one with the universe, with our creator, and know what he has to do in terms of righteousness. Nobody can make anyone do anything. And, and what Jackson did that I didn't like, which a lot of us black men didn't like, was we were always the whipping boy, as we have been. History is always, you know, black people, we are, you know, throughout history, through slavery, through Jim Crow, through lynching, through so many things, we have been made to be the pariah when really we didn't really do anything except be here. You know, we look at slavery. We were bought over here. We didn't ask to come. But we're here now, and yet and still now y'all want to get mad, and then you got, you know, people who don't want any type of, you know, equality or racial advancement and say, well, you know, y'all here, but y'all don't deserve anything. I'm like, well, no, we here. So, yeah, we're citizens of this country. You, and we built this shit. So damn right we want something from it in terms of being treated nothing more than just being a human being. But I digress.
Facts.
You know, but from that level of it, you know, it perpetuates the negative stereotype, and what Jackson did, he perpetuated the negative stereotype of black men being shiftless, irresponsible, infidels in the context of not being able to stay faithful and, you know, abandoning their kids, which is not indicative of us as a whole, you know, yeah, man, and that was something that I had to speak on because he tries to play himself off as being this alpha who speaks for
those pretend alphas are the worst.
Yeah, and they get exposed the most.
Yeah.
What was your feeling on that situation, Hassan, from when you found out about him and his, like King said, the pandering that Derek was doing and then how he ultimately got exposed?
Wait, who talking about? Jesse Jackson?
No.
It ain't only it ain't only Derek Jackson. It's also within the radio culture itself because they see that's a big market right there. You just tell the women what they want to hear, but not what they need.
Oh, I don't even know who that
therefore,
is. I don't even know who that is.
Nah, we're just talking about radio in general. Like, you know how society is.
Oh, right.
It's not really. Yeah, it ain't only just Derek Jackson, but he's like a vessel of that.
Right.
Oh
right.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is. I was talking about Jesse Jackson. But anyway, I think that it helps the narrative of keeping the nuclear family destroyed, and that's why I think that they want to promote, you know, homosexuality and, you know, LGBT and all these things because it helps the narrative of, you know, hating God, hating the nuclear family and, you know, these different things. So yeah, I mean, I think what we have to do, men, for the past 30, 40 years specifically, have really done a bad job. And, you know, we've been slut makers, and we got to stop having sex out of wedlock, and we got to stop being slut makers because the girls are sluts, but we are creating that. So whoever it is that is, quote unquote, the alpha, you know, giving off the alpha vibe, like you were saying, et cetera, whatever, whatever. You know, them having sex out of wedlock is creating the women to be this way because it's actually encouraging their nature, which is controlling the man because they are sex dealers and they're controlling men with the sex. So, and I want to say, you know, up until about 4 months ago, I was the biggest beta on the planet Earth. I was Drake level beta. So I'm saying, like, I'm not like, I'm not speaking like holier than thou. I'm saying I'm finding out this journey, and I had to go for, I had to go and forgive my mother and forgive my father for not being there to protect me from my mother's anger and hatred. So it all starts with forgiveness. And like you said, it's not about the Bible thumpers or about having these mentors. The Bible speaks that everything, the kingdom of heaven is within. So everything needs to be, everything's already within. You know, no one's teaching anyone anything. You're just remembering who you were. And so that's why a lot of these Bible thumpers, you know, they'll read scripture and this and that. But they also use that to manipulate too, because Satan will interpret the Bible better than anyone. So I think the word is there to kind of go in one ear and out the other ear. Don't really hold on to it. You know, just let it pass through, and the Holy Spirit will decipher it for you and figure it out. But the goal is to return to innocence and be the observer. So watch it, look at it, and just observe it. And then, you know, it will slowly change. But yeah, I just want to clarify that, because I was the biggest beta. I'm talking about, I had woman as my God for sure. I mean, the amount of money I spent, the amount of stress and sadness, and you know, I definitely had to overcome the spirit of my mother. So, but I had to understand that that's what it was. I had to understand that I needed to return to the Father, and that's how you get love. You cannot get love from women; they have no love. So you have to get the love from God, and you give the love to the woman, and the women give the love to the children. And now I'm dating someone who I'm like, yo, look, if we get together and we have kids, you definitely not working, because what's the point of us getting married and having kids? You know what I mean? For you to pretend and go play man? Like, all this women pretending to be men thing is just absurd. That's what's wrong, is no one's raising the children and no one's staying home with the children. And, you know, and we also have to understand, it's not about like male chauvinism, but we have to understand that God created man and woman was made of our rib. So we not equal, and it's okay. You know what I mean? You're here to assist the man, and when you give us children, those are our children. Like, when guys are like, yo, thank you for giving my child, that's our children. You assist in raising them and helping. But so we just have to get back to the order, and once we get back to the order, women will actually be really happy, because they want to be that. They want to get back to that. But so many men have been slut makers and not leading properly. Because when we have sex out of wedlock, we're leading improperly. So we're feeding their natural state of Satan. That's their natural state because of what Eve did. So they're fallen, and we have to lead properly. And they will follow if we lead properly. So it is all our fault, actually. It is men's fault, and we have to do better.
You know, and it's unique. You have a unique perspective on it, Hassan, because I wanted to get back in touch with you on certain levels, on because there were certain things, as you said it, it came to my mind. I want to say a lot of this before I end up losing my train of thought. When you talk about the, quote-unquote, the LGBT movement, you know, the feminism movement, what a lot of people would call in hip-hop and in world culture today, you know, the gay agenda. What was your view on the situation with Lil Nas X when he dropped the Call Me By Your Name video? As an artist, you know, what did you feel from what he was, you know, trying to convey with the visuals of the video that he did?
I haven't seen it, but I love him.
Mm-hmm. And what did you find? So, and what, from when he first came on the scene and everything, and obviously he is obviously spoken about being openly gay. What do you find about his music that is very engaging and makes you such a fan of his?
No, I've never heard any of his music other than the Old Town Road, but I'm just saying I love him.
Gotcha.
Understood. Now, and of course, what you were speaking about in terms of how with the relationships today in terms of dynamics about how a lot of men, you know, how, because a lot of it, you know, we got to get the brass tacks. We got to keep it all the way 100 with it. A lot of things men do, we do in the pursuit of women in terms of a lot of things, in terms of whether the car we drive, clothes we wear, you know, what have you, because we do want to bring about a certain level of attraction. You know, in terms of the premarital sex, you know, I can only speak for myself on it. I won't speak for King. You know, King can speak for himself on his experiences. I've learned it at times in terms of dealing with women, you know, and when I have gone there on that capacity. While I have done it, I have always been very careful in context of how I've dealt with certain women in that area, because there are situations once, you know, you do open up that Pandora's box in terms of, you know, in terms of when you engage in certain, you know, physical activities of intimacy, there can be consequences, some of which lead to children. And a lot of times, you know, it goes back to what I said about some of the men that these women pick, you know, because women, because I've always heard a saying, men pick, women choose, and pussy rules. You know, and that's something that is wild because, you know, once again, it goes back to what I said. A lot of women will lay down with certain men, but I'm like, you can see that this guy may not be any good, just like I'll tell certain dudes. You know, like when you lay down with a woman, you know her reputation in terms of, you know, how she, you know, don't really keep dudes around. Like it's just kind of a fun thing for her. Just like I'll tell women, if you see this dude got like 8 baby mamas and like 10 kids, you know something's probably wrong with this. You know, you need to be careful where you're going.
People fall within the flesh. People fall victim to the flesh.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of getting to that spiritual enlightenment, that sanctified place, how do we pretty much begin to really reconcile the communication and the compassion, the community, the nuclear kinship of man and woman in terms of bringing about, you know, a more fruitful and prosperous family structure?
Well, the women have to hold on one second, I'm sorry. Okay, so basically what has to happen is the women have to overcome their mother's spirit and they have to return to the father. And that's why it's really important that whoever you're going to marry, you should get her right from her father. If you can get her straight from her father to you and then to marriage, that's the best. Because any time left, any time in between her leaving her father and then finding you, that's when Satan can really take over. And so you really want to get a woman straight from the father, because then her connection to God never skips a beat, because she gets her love from the father, so and from the man. So it's very important that time period in between is not a lot. If they've had a good relationship with their father, I don't think a lot of those tendencies would be there. But they have to return to the father and forgive their father, because if they don't have a good relationship with their earthly father, they can't have a relationship with the heavenly father. So they have to forgive them for, and children naturally yearn for their father's love. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact. And, so I think women have to overcome the spirit of mama so that they can return to the father. And
and we get what you're trying to say, because from my personal experience, there's been a lot of women I dealt with, one in particular, my first love, and she went through a lot of things. Obviously, I won't mention a name or all those super personal issues, but she definitely dealt with some things from the perspective that I, because we, you know, this was some years back, and she shared with me one night at a conversation, like her life story, and, you know, about her dad wasn't there. And I could see the pathology in terms of the men that she had dealt with throughout the years, how her father's absence really, really, really affected her and some of the fucked up ass, you know, dudes that she met along the way.
Because
once again, we're not saying this is chauvinist. We've seen this time and again with a lot of women in terms of ideally, and I say this from a perspective of experience, not downing women or being a chauvinist. When you're dealing with, because women are emotional creatures, and for a woman to have a prosperous relationship with a man, she has to have that foundation with her father where she learns what a good man is in terms of being a provider, being a supporter, and being someone who can lead. When that is not there, and I can say this from experience, and I've seen this play out so much on so many levels, and any of our listeners can attest to this, you know, obviously Off the Cuff Radio, we're about telling the truth, but we're not about bashing anybody, and we've all seen this play out. In celebrity culture, we've seen this with our family and friends at times. When women a lot of times do not have that foundation with a good man there, they don't understand what a good man is. And it brings a lot of times to these destructive relationships that they have, because if you've never, just like anything, if you've never been taught something in terms of having the proper guidance, instruction, and foundation there, how are you really going to know it, you know, as you get older? Whether relationships, whether education, you know, whether just how to be a good person. If you've never been taught mercy, if you've never been taught benevolence, giving, grace, consideration, compassion, how are you able to impart that to somebody else? And when you do grow up in a situation at times where there isn't a lot of chaotic communication or lack thereof or even abandonment, you know, it becomes a situation where you tend to repeat those cycles. You know, just like when we look in the hood with a lot of these, you know, young boys that grow up into, you know, who don't have their dad. And they never learn what a man is supposed to be in terms of it. And then, you know, their thing is, you know, they can bang out any woman, have a baby, and leave because their daddy wasn't there for them. So they're like, I can do the same thing. And it doesn't make it right on any level.
Right. And more importantly than not having the role model of the father, more importantly, they have the spirit of their mother. So that's where the anger and hatred comes from. I'm speaking because that's what happened to me. My mother turned me away from my father when they separated. And more importantly than not having having that example at times during those adolescent years, it was more that I took on my mother's spirit of anger and hatred. And the funny thing in art, they try to make it like it helps you to be like, you can almost get away with like having, you know, these beta mannerisms in being an artist. It's kind of like a get out of jail free card of like not having to deal with responsibility. It's like, oh, I'm an artist. But the truth of the matter is I had a lot of anger and hatred, you know, and that's because I had my mother's spirit. So, so even more important than not having the role model, it's that they've actually embodied the spirit of Satan.
So I guess this is where, from the situation with the conversation we've had so far, Hassan, I guess when we look at a situation, because before I get into the next question of how you found your way into, you know, rap and you know, what was your first exposure to hip-hop, how important is it for a child, even if there is a separation of parents, that there is still a respect? Because we've heard this before, like, no matter what fucked up ass shit the parents go through, never talk bad about your parent to your child. Never talk bad about the parents, and never talk bad about the other parents of the child in terms of contaminating that child's psyche, like, you know, in the hood.
And that never happens.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, we got to call it like it is, man, because how many times do we, you know, hear a situation where your mama
can't wait. Yeah, mama can't wait to do that.
Yeah, she's like, man, look, daddy.
I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man, and my mom still says this about my dad.
Yeah, you know, how many times, like, you be here in the hood, you know how it go, man, your daddy ain't nothing, you know, he just shiftless, ain't it? I mean, and I'm like, you know, and I tell the women, you know, because I taught in public school for 12 years, so I saw a lot of this in terms of how this affects children, especially a lot of them that didn't have their dads. And my thing is, you never hear, you get an idea of it. Obviously, you don't live in the same house with these kids, so you never really know everything, but you get an idea. This is where a lot of times, too, and I have said this publicly, you know, with friends. And, you know, one thing I've always said, that especially if it does come to a point of with a single mother, I've always said this, do not make that child, do not say in terms of if there's a boy in the house that he's the man of the house. I'm like, that dude does not pay no taxes. He ain't got no job. Let that boy be a boy. Let him grow up and have a childhood. Do not put this responsibility of being a man on him. And he does not have that male figure to follow, and you're basically just leading him out there to find his way, which comes into a situation, because I had to deal with this with some of my students. When you're trying to tell them that they're wrong, the problem is that in the house, nobody's really checking them in terms of the order, you know, in terms of their man. And then he's like, I am father, you son, you do what I say. And then you got the boys ready to buck on grown men. I mean, you know, and because they think that they're grown. And it's like, and the problem is they get into a situation where they begin to think that they're the authority because of a premature displacement.
Exactly. Man, bro, I love what you're saying right now, because I'm going through it right now. And you're absolutely right, because mama made you her boyfriend. So, like, my mom, I didn't even realize, as a grown man, I don't even think she realized it, but she has made me her boyfriend. And that's what happens. Yeah. You're right. At a young age, these mothers are now making the child the husband. You're right. So at a young age, they start to think they have authority and they're ready to buck up and fight grown men. I did all of this. And it's incredible that you just said it that way, because – I didn't think of it exactly in that way, but it's really fascinating.
Well,
very fascinating.
And I'll take it a bit further, but obviously not trying to really step on anyone's toes, but this is just reality, because the situations of this. This is once again why I tell women, if there is a good man that comes your way, you need to swap. He shows real interest, not like he's just trying to bust you out doggy style and then bounce, you know. If he really shows that he's a good man, fuck all that superficial shit of, you know, how much money he got or, you know, and I get it. There's preference. Because I have preferences. There are certain women that I'm just going to be like, oh, shit, when I see them. And it's like, yeah, she's, but one thing about it is my preferences are not shallow, and they're still rooted in realisticness. And a lot of times with a lot of women, that thing is, well, he's good, but maybe I can get better. And I'm like, listen, you know, I may not necessarily – I use this analogy. I may not necessarily get the pair of Jordans I want, but I got a pair of Jordans that are Jordans, and they're just as good, and they're dope regardless. So if I got something good, I can be satisfied with something that's good that I like and that I know – you know, works for me. But when you try to go, and I've noticed sometimes in some situations, and we all can be victim of this, we try to go beyond our means in terms of shooting for certain things. And we don't always, and that goes into greed. Sometimes we need to be content as opposed to being greedy. And when you look at it a lot of times with a lot of women in terms of how they, you know, they dress their sons, because their thing is they're looking at it, well, you know, he's going to attract all the girls. And I'm like, in a sense, that is an extension of it. They want their son to be the man that attracts the women. you know, but they're also by proxy dressing their son in a fashion of what they like in terms of what they think women will like. And it's wild, man, to think about, because it's like, are you really making sure first and foremost that he has the core values of what it is to be a good man in terms of it? Because it is tough to be a single parent, to be a single mother. And I've seen it out there. But it's like, it's not impossible, but you do, number one, if you can, have mentorship, have good men around him who, you know, if he has a male teacher at a school, and, you know, even if he's fucking up in school, don't be running up in the school trying to fight every fucking body because you mad that your child got disciplined for some shit he did. You know, that was his fault, and the school had to deal with it because of that. You know, loving your child does not mean you co-sign all of their nonsense. You know, there's a difference between a child being persecuted and then a situation where if there is a problem in terms of, you know, what is going on with their behavior, whether it's an extension of home or whether there are some problems at school. I'm a solutions-oriented person. I believe that if we come together, we can find a fix for it. But if it turns into a blame game, nobody wins and the problem still exists. And I think this is where a lot of times we really have to have an open and honest discussion about how these things, you know, start at such a young age. Because parents, whether single or both, are child's first teachers. And it is absolutely of the utmost imperative that children have a good example to follow. Because at the end, you know, society's not going to raise your child. They're not supposed to. That is your responsibility. You know, you are responsible for what influence, for the direct influence. As your child becomes of age, you want to set a template that when you've got a foundation set, your child can follow something positive and be like, well, yo, I had a good understanding of what was coming because I was taught well, and that enabled me to function as an adult. Because what you were speaking on, Hassan, about beta males, we're seeing a situation now where a lot of men, you know, are growing up and they really, really, really don't understand the dynamics of what it is in terms of really just understanding,
it's becoming embedded,
you know, chivalry. Yeah, just even how to be polite to a woman, you know, just how to treat a woman, you know, how to go on a job and not, you know, I remember one job I had, like, years ago, and this young dude up here, and I swear him and the manager were into it every damn week because, you mean, he just was, I mean, the dude would just have a bitch fit every time something happened. The manager would tell him something, and it wasn't the manager picking on him, it was just the dude, psychologically, he was just way out there. He was just off in terms of, like, having emotional outbursts, like getting mad, and if he ain't like something, I'm like, dude, you know, you do work a job, and, yeah, there are responsibilities that you have. And even if you don't like something, there's a way to respectfully address it instead of having a temper tantrum.
Yeah, but any man who has mm-hmm. anger, Satan is their daddy, and they have the spirit of their mom. So they have to overcome the spirit because anger is not of God, which is of the man. So mm-hmm. any man who has anger, they're a beta male. And again, I'm not saying this holier than thou. I'm talking about 4 months ago, I was as beta as they come. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, you know, I think that people just have to have the awakening on their own because the scripture also says, like I said, the kingdom of heaven is within. So everything is already
right.
within you. You just have to remember who you are before you were traumatized. And we were all traumatized by. So we have to overcome that and remember who we were and return to the Father. And that's how we will be able to walk in the light and do good. Because the problem is right now, it seems that the liberal radical left, like the lesbians and all these people who want to put a red China communist Nazi Germany onto America because they hate the country for some reason, those people seem like they have a loud voice, but it's just that they have the megaphone. So I don't think it's as many people as it feels like, but they have the megaphone. And also the good Christians in America are going to church on Sunday, but then Monday through Saturday, what are you doing? There's only so much time you can spend in IHOP after church on Sunday. After that, you got to get to work. So we have to do the work, and we have to come together and start doing things. It's not just about going to church on Sunday or going to IHOP for Bible study. We have to get out in the streets and mobilize, because Satan is doing that.
Definitely. And from where you grew up in terms of, you know, being able to, you know, and, you know, what you had endured, how did you find hip-hop because we definitely want to get into the musical background of how you really developed, you know, getting in. How did you define, what was your defining moment in terms of, you know, where you started finding hip-hop as an outlet for you to really articulate your feelings and express yourself? What was your first exposure to?
Well, it's funny because people always say, like, you know, rap is black or rap is this or whatever. But for me, rap was green, because the first time I ever saw rap was in the Ninja Turtles movie. So when I saw the Ninja Turtles and they was doing karate and eating pizza and rapping, and they had their father, which was Master Splinter, who was like this Yoda, like, you know, keeping them in line and like telling them about, like, Raphael. I always felt like Raphael because he had anger. And Splinter was saying it back then, like, overcome the spirit, like, you know, understand, return to the father. So, like, discipline and all that. So, yeah, so Ninja Turtles was the first time I ever experienced rap. And then I played basketball growing up, so Allen Iverson was like culture. You know what I mean? He was like, Allen Iverson was like Cameron. Like, they never won a ring, but they meant so much to culture. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And
shout out to Hampton, Virginia. Hampton, Newport News, where he's from, out on my side. Yeah, man. Shout out to AI. Go ahead, Hassan. Go ahead. I had to do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I went straight from the Ninja Turtles to AI. and then I just fell in love with the culture. I fell in love with, you know, the whole thing, like, you know, the four corners, you know what I mean? The real B-boy, like, graffiti, the art, the dress, the everything, you know? So I just fell in love with it. And for me, you know, Dame was like a superhero to me, because Cameron was like my favorite rapper. Jay-Z was the best rapper. Yeah, Cam was my favorite rapper. Jay was the best rapper. And then Kanye, like, ushered in all of us weirdos that weren't supposed to, like, ever be allowed. You know what I mean? So, and all of them were because of Dame, you know, in a sense. So to me, Dame was like an Avenger character that, like, brought all of my favorite people to the world. So it was funny because for years, me being a producer, I was trying to get someone to, like, you know, every time I would go into meetings with beats, I was always like, yo, but I rap too. I got songs, I got videos. And so it was very similar to the Kanye story, but it was so ironic that the first person that was like, yeah, I'm going to stand next to this and I'm going to, like, help have this come through that same portal and that same platform was Dame. It's almost like a Game of Thrones thing for me. It means more to me than anybody else, but to me it's just like, you know, it was like perfect peace for me because I knew it was God's alignment of, like, the comic book story, you know what I mean? Like, of course it would be, like, Dame crazy enough to, like, go up to Big Boy with me and, like, play Sam nigga and sit next to me. like the most controversial thing that you could possibly do. And, like, you know, of course it would be him, you know. So I just think that, yeah, so I love him for that, and I love him for bringing culture and fighting for culture and fighting for his artists like he always has. I mean, you know, if it's driving 2 hours to Philly to go to Beanie Siegel's court date when nobody else did, you know, Dame did. So, you know, and, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know, like, So yeah, so that's
No, it's okay. No, it's fine. It's all right because we're going to bring it back. We're going to bring it back around because we're going to take it back to sports for a minute because King and myself, you know, we're big. And especially with Iverson, you know, being from my hometown of Virginia, you know, I stay on the what we call the south side, and he stays on the peninsula, you know, the HPT, you know, that's going across the bridge, you know, whether you take the, you know, Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel or the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, you know, so Iverson, and for those that know who listen to our show, if you know about Iverson's history, you know about the trials and tribulations he went through with the bowling alley and, you know, how he spent a short, you know, how he spent a few months in prison, you know, before he was granted clemency by Governor Douglas Wilder and how he ended up at Georgetown. But one thing about Iverson is that dude was of a legendary status of a baller. I mean, he was a terrorist at Bethel High School in terms of what he did on the football and basketball court. And of course, going to Georgetown, you know, doing what he did, you know, he was just a monster there. I mean, we're still talking about that. I believe it was 1996, the Big East tournament game where they went against UConn, Georgetown versus UConn, him and Ray Allen going head-to-head. You know,
amazing.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, Iverson going, you know, number one in the draft, 96, you know, to the Philadelphia 76ers and just really igniting that city. But, you know, it was his second season where we started seeing, you know, the cornrows, you know. Well, I said it back. It was around his third season. We saw the second season. Well, actually, what was it, King, maybe later that first season? When we saw the cornrows and then we saw the tattoos around the third season, give or take, second season, we started seeing that.
Yeah, I think by that second season, he started filling in the tats and I think,
Yeah, but in terms of it, you know, and rest in peace to John Thompson, Big John, I mean, he is loved by all of us in hip-hop culture, sports culture, everybody, and shout out to his son, John Thompson III. You know, Big John, you know, took a chance on AI when nobody did. And, you know, but one thing about it is, you know, when he talked about it, Allen, he was like, Iverson was, he was a young guy who was just about.
He was fearless, too.
Yeah, he was fearless. And one thing about King and Hassan, you know, when we think about it back in the day, you know, and shout out to Gary Moore, his personal manager, because did you see the documentary came out in 2014, the Iverson documentary on Showtime, Hassan? Did you see that?
I did, absolutely.
And you remember what Gary Moore had told Iverson, like, you're going to be, you know, like Dr. King in terms of you're going to have an impact on the world in terms of culture. You know, you're going to be a leader. And what Iverson did in terms of bringing, because there's always an intrinsic link between hip-hop culture and sports, because so many of these, you know, athletes, whether football, basketball, baseball, even hockey, you know, to a degree, you know, they all, a lot of them came from, you know, obviously if they were black, they came from obviously, you know, being born black and having to, you know, deal with being black in America or Canada or the world in general. And some came from the hood. So they understood what it was in terms of how hip-hop influenced them because hip-hop influenced the hood. And that is how hip-hop, well, the hood, rather, by proxy, influenced hip-hop culture. You know, and that's how hip-hop came about. So you're seeing Iverson really begin to explore and express his love affair with it, how it influenced him, you know. Then we start seeing, you know, the tats, you know, we start seeing the jewelry, we start seeing the cornrows, nothing of which is wrong, you know. It was just him, and he bought a style that really up until then we had never seen in pro sports ever. Nobody was rocking cornrows like that before him that I can recall.
Yeah,
me either.
You know, I think, I say that back, I think Sam Perkins back in the day. Sam Perkins did. I want to say Mark Bryant, who used to play for the Trailblazers. Sam Perkins, of course, who played you know, for the Pacers at one point, also the Supersonics, you know. But Iverson was just – but in terms of the big jewels, like, nobody was rocking big chains like that, you know, and everything. And Iverson really – he made it – he was like, listen, I'm from the hood. I don't shy away from the hood. I'm proud of who I am, and y'all just going to have to deal with it. And that door he opened up really, really, really was a paradigm shift. As an artist and as a producer, Hassan, what do you find in terms of being that? How important is it to you to have that outlet to express yourself? And tell us about the in terms of how that is comparable to Iverson's. And tell us the meeting or what your first meeting with Dane, how this would all lay the foundation for what would come later on.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. Wait, say that again about the first part of it?
About how your career trajectory mirrored Iverson in terms of having that outlet to be yourself and to, you know, really express who you were and not let anybody control you in terms of how you had to be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, they make a joke and they say, like, geniuses are kids with good parents. And I think there's truth to that. I think there was, like, I think definitely I was, like, raised to believe that I could do whatever that I thought that I could do. And there's some kids that are raised to think that they can't do anything, and there's some kids who think that they can do anything. So I think that I always just I think that if you have fear, you have hatred, because you can't have fear and love. So I think that it's one or the other. And I think that, like, I think the Holy Spirit really just always guided me to not believe in fear. And I think there's been moments where I think someone has COVID in the city, so I'm kind of scared. But yeah, I think there's been moments, obviously, like, there's been moments where, you know, we question, like, there's even, like, where Noah doesn't know what he's doing. He's like, should I even be building this thing? Like, am I leading everyone to their death? Like, so there's always been, like, these people who have these, like, these thoughts, but you have to doubt every thought. Paul said to bring every thought into captivity, the good thoughts and the bad thoughts, they're all lies. None of them exist. So when someone praises you or when someone hates you, they're both liars. To stay in the present and stay in the now, because the devil likes to pull you into the past and into the future, because that's what he lives. He lives in the past and in the future. So he tries to pull you back into memories or mistakes you made and make you have shame and sadness. And then he also pulls you into the future with anxiety and hopes, just so that those hopes don't get met, and then you feel even worse than you did before and you want to kill yourself. So the deal is to stay in the present, because that's where God is, to stay in God's presence. But more importantly than God being there, Satan can't be there, because he can't be in his presence. That's in the scripture. So I remember talking to this little kid one time. He was like, I love T-Rex. You know why I like T-Rex? And I was like, why? He said, because T-Rex can eat anything he wants. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. But you know what really makes T-Rex cool? Not that he can eat anything he wants. No one can eat him.
Yeah, the apex. He's an apex predator. Nobody could. There were predators, but he was the apex. He was the top predator.
So more importantly than God being in the present and in the now, the devil can't be, because he can't be in his presence. So that's just so amazing. So staying in the now and doubting every thought and just returning to innocence, returning to a childlike mind state. Because when you look at babies, they just observe. They look at everything around. They're observing. So the goal is to return to the observer and return to the Father and return to innocence and just observe it and let it all pass, the good and the bad. Because through it all, what I realized, even through Sand Nigga, like, there was times where, like, people that I looked up to, like, heroes of mine, they were like, yo, I can't fuck with you no more. I can't stand next to you no more if you're doing this. Like, heroes of mine. You understand? And I take this, like, again, I look at this like Game of Thrones. Like, this is, to me, like, I hail these people, right? So for me to have someone say that to me, that hurt, right? That hurt. But I was like, okay, cool. I got to just keep going through it. And through it all, through all the highs and lows of that time period of, like, you know, Dame being like, yo, I love Sand Nigga, and Kanye being like, yo, I want to be on this song. And but then, like, this person, you know, his name is GLC, but he's like, yo, you know, I can't stand next to you. Or, like, Big Boy being like, yo, what the fuck is this song, like, live on the radio and shit. Like, all these highs and lows, what I realized through it all was by not complaining, I became a man.
And I feel you on that, because a lot of times people get so caught up in lamenting and just berating their if there's an unfortunate lot of situations. And it's okay to be upset about something and be discouraged. But my thing is, you know, hell, me and King on the show, you know, we've had situations that went wrong, but we didn't sit down and complain about it, did we, King?
Exactly, you know, and that's what Democrats and liberals have forced men into being, is complainers, and they want us all to complain and tell all our problems to women and say that it's okay for men to say that they have mental illness and all this stuff. None of this stuff exists. It's all of Satan, and once you return to the Father, none of these things can exist.
Got you. So tell us about your first meeting with Dame. How did you end up meeting him in terms of from when you first started doing beats? And who were some of your producer influences that inspired you to do beats?
I was in Wyoming doing the 5 album Melee, when Kanye put out the Kids He Goes, Teyana Taylor album. This was a couple years back, and it was like 5
albums.
Great album. Album, all those albums.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of mad because a lot of the beats that I actually had got taken off because Kanye wanted to produce the whole thing. But anyway, it is great though. But point is, so yeah, I mean, I was out there in Wyoming working on those, working on some of that stuff. And, you know, this was kind of right after he got out of the mental hospital and he was kind of healing. And he had all the original, like, crew back around, like people from Chicago and, like, you know, and Game. And, like, it felt nostalgic. It felt like, you know, I don't know, it was really cool. And I'm just there, and I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. And it, like, it almost felt like how Through the Wire, like him taking that photograph of him in the sick bed with his face blown up, Wyoming felt like his new sick bed. Like, yo, I just got out of the mental hospital, and now instead of taking that picture to show his pain, he just flew everybody to the middle of nowhere to feel his pain currently. And so it was just cool to see all of that and just be like a fly on the wall, like, in this beautiful Wyoming landscape and, you know, fire pit, and him just playing the album, and, you know, Chris Rock is there, and Jonah Hill and Dame, and, you know, all these people. And so Dame was like, yo, you out here, like, really, you really out here? And I was like, because I had seen Dame a few other times previous to that, but this was, like, the first time we really, like, chopped it up. And I was like, yeah, I told you, you know, I've been working on some of the stuff. And he was like, yo, I opened up a gallery in Burbank, you should come through when we get back to LA. And I was like, yeah, for sure. So So I went and checked him at the gallery, and then he was like, "Yo, if you want to throw like an event here, you know, do your thing." So I threw a beat auction at his gallery where I had this idea, because I hate emailing beats. So I was like, "Yo, just like a painter who holds a gallery for his paintings, you have to come to the gallery and like check his paintings. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna make a beat gallery where you have to come and watch visuals that are attached to the beat, and I'm gonna control the lighting, the temperature. I want to create the mood of how you hear these beats for the first time. I don't know what you're doing when I email the beat. You could be in the bathroom or something like that. Like, that ain't my aesthetic. You know what I mean? I need my aesthetic. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just put out that new video, that Barcelona video. Man, that is like, I've been waiting my whole life to shoot a one-shot video like that. My whole life, a one-shot. And that's a hyper-zoom lens that they use in National Geographic, like, to zoom in on lions without scaring them.
What was it like to do that?
That's ill.
Yeah, so I'll go back to that, but cause I really am excited. And there's three more just like that coming. So we coming, like, okay. You know what I mean? And, you know, and I get it. People nowadays, attention spans is like, you know, they don't appreciate something like that, but I don't give a fuck. Like, you know what I mean? I put out saying, nigga, I don't care. I'm doing what I want to do and what God's telling me to do. And I'm a fan of Stanley Kubrick and Fellini and Quentin Tarantino, so I'm really trying to, like, you know what I mean, with these visuals, like, that looks like it should be in a museum, that music video. Like, that is, like, highest level, you know. But anyway, so I did a beat auction where I put QR codes on the wall, and you had to scan your phone on the QR code in real time while the beat was playing, and whoever placed the highest bid got sent the stems directly to their phone, no email. So this was like a high-level, innovative Steve Jobs type of idea, and I had like 600-700 people come to Dame's gallery, and like all these people that he knew came. He's like, "Yo, how you know all these people?" Blah, blah, blah. And he just was, you know, I think he really was kind of impressed by the event I did, and it was all based around selling beats with visuals and QR codes and stuff like that. So after that, he was like, "Yo, you should do this again." And I was like, "Nah, I don't want to do this again. I want to put out my album." And he was like, "Wait a minute, you rap?" I was like, "Yeah, I rap." And he was like, "So play your album." And then I played my album, and then he was like, "Wait a minute, does Kanye know about this?" And I was like, "You know, I don't really be pushing my agenda, because that's the first way to be kicked out, is like be pushing your agenda. So I'm just there. When I'm in Wyoming, wherever, I'm just there to like, how can I be of service, you know what I mean? But Dame was like, "Nah, fuck that. This is dope." Like, and he called Kanye right then and there and was like, "Yo, you need to come through and listen to Hassan's album." And he came, and we filmed it all.
That's dope, man. I mean, one thing about it, you know, to have that level of creativity, because when you mentioned, of course, Tarantino and Kubrick, I'm familiar with, you know, what was the third director that you mentioned, Hassan?
Fellini. So he did a lot of black and white films. Like I believe like in the 30s and stuff like that, but kind of like Hitchcock too. Hitchcock is also like, you know, obviously one of the, I mean, probably the best actually.
Hitchcock is one of the masters of suspense, you know, a horror, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock Theater, of course, you know, when you look at Stanley Kubrick, you know, one of my favorite movies that he did, you know, Full Metal Jacket, of course, The Clockwork Orange. You know, Eyes Wide Shut, you know, of course, with Quentin Tarantino. I mean, Pulp Fiction, you know, Kill Bill, you know,
yeah.
Django Unchained. I mean, these are cinematic geniuses. And,
Glorious Bastards.
Yeah, and Glorious Bastards. So this is something that obviously from your cinematic scope, Hassan, you obviously went to the masters for inspiration with it, and especially that translated into your determination and your drive and your production. Now, Dame, there's been a lot to say about Dame, because Dame has said a lot throughout the years, and he's been very opinionated. And there's a lot, you know, a lot of feelings people have about Dame. What would you want people to have understood about Dame in terms of clarification, to dispel some of the misgivings? And then I'm going to ask you about the same about Kanye. What would you want people to understand about Dame?
Sorry, I know I didn't answer the question about beat making. So I'll just say that, like,
It's okay. We'll get back. Yeah.
Whatever, but I'll just real quick touch on it real quick. I think I did kind of answer it accidentally, but like, I think obviously J Dilla and, you know, like, I come from that. You know what I mean? I'm boom bap. You know what I mean? At my core, like,
right.
I still use an MPC 2000 XL and an ASR 10, and like, you know, I sample and like, I'm boom bap to the, you know, so like Dilla and, you know, MF Doom, and like, that's like the
you said
cloth
Doom.
That I'm
You're all
from.
Right with me.
yeah. Well, that's what's so crazy
what
is that
goats.
Standing is a Doom sample. We flipped a Doom record, and it's super boom bap. Like, there's really nothing more culture than saying, you know, we all African, I'm straight from Iraq, like, over a Doom boom bap beat. Like, but anyway, So I'm from the Dilla cloth, but I think that I'm way more of like a Stanley Kubrick than I am a Dilla, because what I learned about like design, like with Steve, is like spacing, right? So spacing mm-hmm. is the key to design, and it's like
right.
The more you understand proportion and spacing, that's why I made women my god for so long, because they helped me understand proportion. and that was my understanding of design for so long, was like, okay, the more spacing you have, even in basketball, right? Phil Jackson understood spacing with
the triangle
offense, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, it's all about spacing. Life is about proportion and spacing. So Steve understood that. Steve wasn't a computer nerd. Steve was a designer. You know what I mean? And Stanley Kubrick, the same thing. Stanley understood design and stuff like that. So it really is all production. It's just about understanding you must delete whatever you don't love. If you don't absolutely love it, delete it. Don't be married to all these ideas. Because sometimes when people hear a sample, like when producers hear a sample, they want to add all this stuff on top of it to make it their own, because that's ego. They really should just deliver it to the people the same way that they heard it, that made them feel the way they felt to even want to sample in the first place. Just deliver it to the people that made you feel the way it made you feel, instead of adding all these things just to be ego and be like, yo, this is my flip on it. And like, people be adding too much, you know what I mean? So you got hi-hats, shakers, and congos. Like, the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, so it's just like, relax. You know what I mean? It's like, so I think spacing and proportion. And I learned that through Dilla, but then even more through, like, you know, Stanley and stuff. So they're really the same to me. They're all the same thing. You know what I mean? Or like Charlie Chaplin. He's the greatest of all time, and he never said a word. You know what I mean? Like, it was silent film.
Later on.
Yeah, until, like, The Great Dictator stuff, which I love. So yeah. But, like, yeah, but, like, all these silent films, he ain't say nothing. So, like, sometimes words, this is going to be a soundbite, so get ready. Sometimes words get in the way of what you're trying to say.
That's true. That is true. Sometimes
and
you
Dame,
just have to
and
let...
Dame, and Dame, I just, real quick, Dame, I just want to say
ahead.
That Dame, I learned about family. Through Dame. Dame is like like the Irishman or something like that, or like God's Father or something like that. Like, you know, we'd be going to a meeting, you know, with the Nation of Islam, but like, he's like, yo, we got to go pick up my daughter. And like, you know, then we go to Adidas headquarters, and like, he makes sure that everyone gets, you know, fitted, you know what I mean? Down to the driver, like, yo, make sure you pick out an outfit. You know, while we're at the Adidas headquarters, and like, then we leave and go straight to this Nation of Islam meeting, and he makes sure to shout everybody out in the crew, you know, and then picks up his daughter, and then takes the, you know, just his attention to detail with family and with it taking care of everybody else before him it's unbelievable. I mean, it goes back to what I said about, like, him driving all the way to Philly to go to Beans' court when no one else did. Like that, now I've seen it in real life. I always saw it from afar, but now I've seen it in real life.
Definitely. And one thing about it, one thing, because, you know, of course, you know, we had talked previously before you had come on, and, you know, me and you had this conversation, a song, like, about a situation where, you know, of course, what was going on when Old Dirty got out of prison, and, you know, he was trying, you know, and Dame bought him on, and, you know, he had that talk with RZA, you know, was on the joint back of the day, and Dame said straight up, "I'm only paying Dirty." He's like, because RZA wanted his cut, but he's like, "I'm only paying Dirty." Like Dame, yeah, Dame had that straight out, like, "Look, Dirty's the guy I signed. Dirty is the one that I'm paying." You know, that's what it is. I actually have that single, too. You know, Pop Shots, I believe. Oh, no, the Neptunes that did that one. But this is a joint that was a joint Old Dirty released after he got out, Pop Shots. But, yeah, but, I mean, but Dame has always been a guy, because I had read, you know, somewhere that Dame is, you know, Dame is one of those people, he will fight for what he believes in, and he fights for his artists in terms of making sure that, you know, everybody is taken care of. You know, I want to ask the same about Kanye. Kanye has said some things, myself personally, I didn't agree with. I've said it on the show a couple times. But I will never, ever, ever discredit that man on geniusness. Kanye is one of the best ever in terms of just production. I mean, his shit is just on another scale. But he has said some controversial and wild things over the years. What would you want people to know in terms of your interactions with Kanye about, what would you want to tell everybody in terms of letting everyone know about, you know, who the real Kanye Omari West is?
A son of God, man. A son of God who has over and over and over and over shown the world and all of us his light and his love in the same way that when Jesus came riding into town on a donkey and they, I think it was Palm Sunday, and they were waving the palms and they're like, "Jesus, yes, you're here. You're here to, you know, overthrow the government, and you're here to throw fire and brimstone, and you're here to rescue us." And the shortest verse in the Bible, when, you know, Jesus wept, he started crying because he looked around and he said, "Man, y'all don't get it. Y'all really don't get it. Y'all, when have I ever thrown fire and brimstone? When have I ever came with destruction? All I've ever done is heal. I healed myself. I healed you guys. I healed Nazareth. I've only came with healing and love since the beginning. What would make y'all think that I'm that?" And I use that as a correlation with Kanye because, you know, it's almost like everybody wants him to do that, overthrow the Trump or whoever people think is the big bad wolf, and, "Oh, you're supposed to be our guy. You're the George Bush don't care about black people guy. You're supposed to come and throw fire and brimstone and overthrow the bad person." And he's like, "But all I ever did was heal and bring love. And Jesus Walks and College Dropout with parables of healing and love and self-esteem. Y'all don't get it, do you?" And I think he's had to cry for that. I think he's cried to see that, wow, everything that I thought that I brought has been in vain. And you still want to choose Barabbas. And if you leave it up to the people, they always choose Barabbas.
What is this, how has his production style influenced you from working so closely with him?
Amazing. I hope this is being recorded because that was amazing. That it's last 45 seconds. I need that last minute. That is like eulogy level. That was eulogy level. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
It's okay. We record this. We got it.
Yeah. It's gonna be replayed.
And
okay.
Yeah.
Because that
we'll
part right there, I never felt the goosebumps that I just felt right there when I'm explaining that. But anyway.
Yeah, it'll be up. We'll have it up on YouTube. Well, you know, once King puts it up on YouTube, it'll be there. So we'll send you the link for the show once we have it uploaded. But yeah, most definitely. So what would you say? It's okay. Because
you know,
one thing about it, Hassan, is off the cuff radio is about spontaneity. It's about those unscripted and just human moments, which is what you had. It was a human moment, and you know. We will never, ever, ever ask our guests to apologize for having a good time expressing themselves or really being in the moment. And for you to be in that state of euphoria with that expression you just gave of such effusive praise for Kanye, it's just natural. I think it's a genuine sentiment, and I think it's a great, like you said, soundbite. You know, it's just real, you know. And it shows that, you know, you really rock. From the perspective of his musical influence, how has he influenced you in terms of as you continue in your production, in terms of developing your sound, the aesthetics, you know, your whole the whole effect of what you of your recording process?
How he's affected my what?
Influence your recording style in terms of musically, in terms of in terms of your process. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he's really. I mean, if you think about like even if you do stay with the Bible comparison, like there was like a BC and there was an AD and there was like an Old Testament and there was a New Testament. It's like
right.
J was the last of the Old Testament. And then Kanye was like the first of the New Testament. He really brought all these new rappers. You think about J. Cole and Kendrick and Drake, for sure. None of these people exist without Kanye. So he allowed all of like the weirdo, like not supposed to, just, you know, the weirdo creative kids that were like nerds, you know. And Pharrell did too, but Kanye just did it on another level. You know what I mean? He just did it to where he really made it cool to believe in yourself, have self-esteem. And again, that's why I say, like, people all want him to be like, after George Bush don't care about black people, they wanted him to be like the poster child of like anti-government, anti-establishment. But his message was always about love and healing. So it's weird that people would expect him to do anything else. But yeah, obviously he's affected this whole generation, no doubt about it. And obviously he's affected me too much to where, you know, I'm like, you know, but I think there's moments where I find like my own thing. That's why I think Sandy was so important to me, because only I could do that. And it was like
right.
Finally a moment where it was like, okay, maybe the flow is still like Kanye, or maybe the audacity is like Kanye, but that was finally my Halloween costume. Meaning like
you're not really like
you don't really have a uniform until you have a Halloween costume. That's why, like, Lil Pump and Tekashi, that's why they are, like, so legendary, because you could dress up like them for Halloween.
And what was the creative process in terms of when you really decided to sit down and write that song? Because it's a dope track, you know, definitely something that is going to definitely, you know, be startling for a lot of listeners, but definitely it was something that was from you, and I thought it was genius. What was what was the idea, and what was the process in terms of your writing and then recording?
For what? For
Sandigger. What was the inspiration, and then ultimately the process in writing it and then recording?
Yeah, it started years ago. I had the poem for years. I had the poem for years and years. It was always just a poem. Mm-hmm. And any time at shows, even like when shows went really, really bad, which a lot of shows have gone really, 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 really bad, let me tell you. And but any time they would go really bad, for some reason, it was an instinct to just break into Sandigger a cappella with no music. And all of a sudden, I don't know if it would get good, but it definitely got interesting, the show. So it always felt like it was like my Houdini trick at the end to just like do this. And no matter if it was good show or a bad show, you definitely remembered after that. You know what I mean? And it was always like a moment of like, it was weird. It's never caused violence. It's never caused. It's always been like, I don't even think people know how to react, because I do it a cappella and I usually stand on something and I usually am very assertive when I say it. And so people think it's a suicide bombing or Al Qaeda attack. I don't know, but whatever it is, it usually is alarming. So it was a poem for a long time, and then I tried to make beats for it, but I never could make the right beat for it. And then, finally, it took one of Dame's guys, who works a lot with Clark Kent. He actually made the beat, and then I just was like,
okay,
maybe this poem will work over it. And then as soon as I did it, Dame was like, "Yo, this is revolutionary. This is like Ice Cube, Cop Killer," and like he was like, "This is the one," and I was like, "Yeah, are you sure? All these other songs, are you sure this is the one?" And he was like, "Yeah," but now
definitely
I've made an entire comedy. Now I've made it. This is a little bit of a segue, but I've made an entire comedy TV show about this whole thing. So
yeah, tell us about
if nothing
the TV
else.
Show.
There's a yeah, it's kind of like a Entourage meets like Seinfeld kind of comedy, and it's kind of got like Dame playing like the Ari Gold agent character, and then me, and we're releasing Sandigger, so it shows the entire release of it and all the people telling me not to do it and him telling me to do it. And but in the midst of it all, I'm also trying to pitch a pilot. So the pilot episode is me trying to pitch the pilot.
You know, obviously, and I'm asking this question just out of, inquisitive and not, and definitely not insulting. Would you say in terms of like, because we've seen situations like, what was that movie Bamboozled, you know, with back in the day, would you say this is kind of like having that same spirit of where somebody, because when Spike Lee did that movie, it was kind of a lampooning in a sense of pop culture in terms of sometimes the most craziest things that we do. And we, because the lead character in the show, in a movie, he does it purposefully to try to get people pissed off, but then at the end people end up loving it. Would you say juxtaposed with your project, this is kind of like the same thing, because, you got this song and it's like you're thinking it, maybe I shouldn't, but then, Dame's character's like, yeah, go ahead and, do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I felt like it was just like, it'd be funny to kind of use all these clips of like when me and Dame went on TMZ and Big Boy and all these different things. I was like, it'd be funny to use the real clips, but then reenact the days leading up to that or afterwards. To show context, too, because I think a lot of people don't have context. So I think by watching the show, people will actually like the record more because they'll actually know that, like, They just have content.
Visual companion.
I think so. Yeah, and I think that if people just see, like, these shocking things sometimes, like, you know, there's got to be context to it. So I think that this is, like, a way to show people, you know, the humor in it, also the, you know, there's also a lot of factual things, too. Like, you know, people don't realize that Africa and the Middle East are separated by the Suez Canal. But that's a man-made river that they created, right? But other than that, they're connected, the Middle East and Africa.
Right.
So, like, but my personal belief is that they wanted to separate the Holy Land from Africa, because everyone's Holy Land is in the Middle East, right? If you're Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, and that's a lot of bread. That's a lot of money, economic empowerment. And I think they wanted to separate that from Africa. So I think there's a lot of, like, things.
And I didn't want to interrupt you, Hassan, but I also wanted to say this, too, for our listeners, to really give it further context, because you're absolutely right. And when you look at Africa, the continent of Africa, Africa has the richest resources in the world in terms of diamonds, oil, everything, you know. You know, so, I mean, Africa itself is an economic, you know, powerhouse in terms of resources. You know, we won't get into, well, we could get into it somewhat because, once again, it's history. When you look at a lot of the jewels in terms of the diamonds, you know, with the De Beers and a lot of colonizers that came over there, that's why, you know, a lot of these situations, you know, that would lead to apartheid and so many different things. Because when colonizers, you know, the Dutch, you know, English came in, when they realized what was there, and this is not white bashing or anything, anybody, you know, disclaimer, because this is all historically documented, the things that have happened over there. You know, we're just retelling the history. But when you're looking, when the colonizers came over there, and this is, you know, this is in, of course, addition to when slavery came, but when they came here and they realized what we had in terms of the resources, you know, basically, they were like, okay, well, we're gonna have at it and get, you know, take some of this for us. And, you know, and at the same time, when you look at it, because Africa, people think about Africa being a country, and I'm like, no, it is not. Africa is a continent with 55 countries on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're dealing with Zimbabwe, when you're dealing with South Sudan, when you're dealing with, you know, Uganda, you know, Rwanda, you know, Botswana, Tanzania, you know, all of that, you know, and, you know, for those that really want to read the deeper history in terms of what's going on there, it's a lot there. I mean, you know, Liberia, you know, which is West Africa. You know, I mean, when you're looking at Charles Taylor, when you're dealing with Uganda, I believe with Idi Amin, you know.
Liberian girl.
Yeah, Michael Jackson, cue to Michael Jackson. You know, yeah, man. But one thing about, but, you know, I mean, you know, you're doing big things, Hassan. And, I mean, what have you learned in terms of the music industry from the business side as you have, you know, we got about 10 minutes left. So, and we've enjoyed this, you know, definitely hearing, you know, interacting with you on this. What have you learned about the industry for the time that you have been in it, in terms of just understanding the ups and downs, highs and lows, people you've met, and really getting your product out there?
Well, yeah, I'll just say real quick, too, I love all that information about that. And, yeah, like, and for me, I just know that because, like, my father, right, when he had to flee Iraq, he lived in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, but he also lived in Egypt for 2 years. So the fact that they were able to walk and be that close to Egypt, you know what I mean, it's like just from my father's experience, I know that it's right there next to each other. And how they try to teach in class, like, they try to teach in school that Egypt is like its own thing. They don't even like teach Egypt as being part of Africa. That's like
it
a
is.
Way you already know they be trying to. What do you mean?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying Egypt is in Africa, you know. But that's where, like,
yeah, but they be trying to act like it's its own thing or something. Like, they don't even like connect Egypt with Africa. I'm like, what? Now y'all trying to take Egypt away, like from Africa? Like what the? So yeah, I think that and Jesus, there's no scriptures of Jesus in the Bible from 20 years old to 30 years old. Zero scripture from 20 to 30. And I believe he went to college, which was Egypt.
True.
And then came.
Right.
I mean, either Egypt or India, but Egypt was right there. So I think I would
go with Egypt, Hassan, because when you look at the history in terms of what it was with what was going on there, you know, of course, you had Nefertiti, you had Tutankhamun, you had Ptolemy. You had all those kings and queens and all of that, you know. And when we look at the embalming in terms of how the pharaohs, you know, and the queens, you know, were, you know, in terms of the sarcophagus, you know, how they were, you know, the bodies were preserved. I mean, when you're looking at the pyramids, you know, how they were immaculately drawn up. I mean, this shows that they had knowledge of mathematics, science, and medicine way before.
Yep.
You know, this is where Europeans would end up getting. You know, and this predates European civilization thousands of years before in terms of really, you know, Africa. That's why, you know, shout out to Planet Asia, you know, the Cali agent, you know, his acronym all started in Africa, you know, and from that perspective, go ahead, please.
No, and yeah, like even if you go into the pyramids, you still now you can see that engraved in the pyramids are like the formula of Advil. And, like, all these different, like, things that we use now, they had engraved in the pyramids back then, like to take away headache and take away this and da-da-da. So Jesus came back to Nazareth after 10 years of, like, learning all this information and had all these remedies that were really, like, simple remedies, but because they didn't know what was going on in Jerusalem and in Nazareth, he was, like, you know what I mean? Like, look like, oh, my God, this guy is, like, on another level. But he just had the information, you know what I mean, to heal some of these remedies. And also people don't realize the three wise men brought him frankincense, myrrh, and books. Having books in your house back then was like having a computer. That was like having an iPhone or something like that. And the three wise men brought him books and spices and herbs and all these healing properties. But he was raised in a house full of healing. So he understood this on another level even before he went to Egypt because of the three wise men bringing him basically an iPhone at that time.
Great analogy. And, you know, the thing is, too, because, you know, this is why when people talk about the movie Gods of Egypt, this is why people of color, we are a little bit miffed about it, because let's just be real, people in Egypt, in Africa in general, or the Middle East, they're people of color. They were not white people. They were people of color. This is why the movie Gods of Egypt got the flack that it did, because these were white actors playing. Yeah, you know, these are white actors. Look, when you got white people who are upset about the historical inaccuracy of it, you got a problem, you know. But the reality was, and this is not once again, this is not bashing white people, but the fact is there are people of color, you know, and that in Africa is people of color. You know, that's where we, you know, whether you're Middle Eastern, whether you're African, you know, if you're dealing, a lot of people, this is another, you know, a bit of a history that people need to know. Freddie Mercury of Queens. You know, I want to say Freddie, it was it Zanzibar? He was born, I believe. But Freddie of Queens, he was, Freddie Mercury is of African descent.
Yeah.
You know, let me make sure, because I want to, get this.
But
right,
I will say this. I will say this, though, and, you know, again, this is you know, you take it for how take it or leave it. But I do genuinely believe that all of amazing. Yeah, and again, take it or leave it on this one, but I do believe that all of the divide and conquer is the plan, so we can't fall for it, and we have to realize, again, the scripture says, we do not battle over flesh and blood, but of spirit and principalities. So there is no such thing really as really, you know, races and all that stuff. It's really about the heart, and it's about good and evil, and all these isms don't exist. The Bible doesn't speak about any ism. It does not exist. And they use it to, you know, like even my dad. My dad's Muslim, and he's from Iraq, and he always talks about Islamophobia, and it's all bullshit. I tell him, I say, I'm sorry to tell you, it's none of it exists. Allahu Akbar ism and all these isms that, you know, it's just another way to make people victims and complain. And you have to deal with people's heart because they don't want you to deal with people's heart because that will get to the root of it. But if they put isms on it and other names on it, we'll continue to fight and we'll continue to divide and conquer. And that's what the Democrats, specifically Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they want, and they, because they hate God, they hate the nuclear family, and they want to promote lesbians. And that's the one thing that any place that has women running the show, women matter. Want to
matter. Hello.
Yep. Oh, sorry.
You're good.
Went out a little bit.
And in 6 months, Kamala Harris is going to be running the show, so we really got to get ready for, you know, we got to fight so we don't lose America. Because what they want to do is turn us into a socialist, communist country, and Joe Biden is hand-delivering us to China the same way. You know, I'll just say this, right? I'll say this. And maybe it's a good way to close, but this is going to be heavy. But this is the truth. The same way that Nazi Germany promoted propaganda videos to not say anything bad against Germans, for years they put out propaganda videos. Don't say anything bad about Germans. You know, Germans are good. They're here to help. Don't bash Germans. When the Holocaust happened, people were so conditioned to not say anything that they were complicit with the Holocaust. Now, all of a sudden, there's never been, after 9/11, there was never a anti-Muslim hate bill passed. Blacks have been treated terrible for years. There's never been a anti-black hate bill. Within 6 months of Joe Biden's presidency, there's a bill that got passed, an anti-Asian hate bill. An entire bill on not hating Asians, but no one else has ever gotten that. And it's funny that it happened 6 months within his presidency when we already know that he's a Chinese communist agent who has sold us over to Red China. And soon, once we become a full socialist communist country, it'll be too late because we will be conditioned to not say anything bad against Chinese. Just like Nazi Germany.
But I mean, you got to remember too this, Hassan, in terms of how Germany became, you know, in terms of where Nazi Germany started. This was having to do with what had happened after the Treaty of Versailles, after they lost in World War One, which, you know, Germany was demilitarized. But one thing about it is that, you know, this is how Hitler came to power, because when you have a country that was already, you know, defeated, you have to find an enemy. And what Hitler did was he pointed to the Jews as they were the enemy. Obviously, you know, we're about to close out, so we can't really get into all that history, but you see how things can happen when, you know, when if people are vulnerable, how things can be influenced. So you never know.
Yep.
I mean,
and we're doing it to ourselves. The Bible speaks that not only will we not fight against the Antichrist or the mark of the beast, but we will wait in line and beg for it. We will actually assist and aid in our own demise. And that's why now with the Chinese virus, just like Kamala Harris said today and Joe Biden said today, that, oh, if you have your vaccine, now you can come out and play. Just like Mama says, oh, you did the dishes? Now you can come out and play a little bit. They want to be Mama, and they and we keep being complicit with it until we fully are in a socialist communist thing. And that's why, like, even with unemployment or any of this stuff, right, like, soon they'll just turn the unemployment into a universal base income, and that will be socialism. And then it will become communism when there's no more cash and everything is tracked. They don't want cash because they want to know everything that you buy. So soon it will turn into a cashless society, and the vaccines will never end. You'll take vaccines till you know, forever. It will never end. And this control will never end. And we have to be careful of defunding the police, because what they want to do is they want to remove the police so that they can have a government tyranny. People don't understand that. We can't fall for the low-hanging fruit, because they want to destroy the police so that they can just have a full radical government tyranny. The police is there to separate from the government and the people. But once the police is out of there, they'll just have full control, tyranny, martial law style. So people thought that Trump was on that mission, but they're going to see that this is the move. And now what they're doing is they're bringing in the illegal aliens. Last thing, real quick. California used to be a red state, but they brought in all the illegal aliens to turn it into a blue state, and now they're trying to do that to Texas. Texas is still a red state, but they're bringing in all the illegal aliens from Mexico to turn it into a purple state and eventually a blue state, and they're going to do the same thing with Florida, bring all the illegal aliens, and they'll turn those into blue states, and the Democrats will stay in power if they can get Texas and Florida, and they'll never let go of their tyranny.
Well, definitely. I mean, and like I said,
that man painted a grim picture of America like Kanye painted a picture with his beats, man. That go to show you got to brace up.
Yeah, because I love America, man. I love America. My father came from Iraq to America and built a life for himself as an illegal alien, did it the right way, turned into an American, built a family and from nothing to, you know, and that's what America is about. You know what I mean? It's beautiful, and we have to protect that and not turn it into a communist Chinese regime. Because it will be too late. And that's why alpha males who believe in God and believe in family and love God more than anything else, that's what's – because what happens is the liberals use whatever you care about, and they'll use that against you. So that's why the Bible says – Jesus says, if you're going to follow me, you must turn away from your father, mother, brother, sister, and children. You must turn away from your children if you're going to follow me, meaning you can't put anything above him or the truth, or the libs will use that against you, because they find out what matters to you, just like the court system, and just like we know the court system is not in favor of men, and and America will use whatever they can to destroy the family and to destroy men so that they cannot lead properly and keep America the best country on this side of heaven.
And on that note, I guess we're going to close it out. Hassan, once again, you know, thank you for your time. You know, thank you you know, for, you know, the combo, man. I mean, you really brought something to the show tonight, man, and we're so appreciative. You know, like I said, keep us posted on those videos, man, because we definitely want to check them out.
And where,
you know,
where can people find you at?
Yeah, where can find your stuff?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, on, I don't know, you know, I'm figuring out this whole internet world, and, you know, I mean, I'm uploading the stuff on YouTube and on Instagram, obviously, and then Dame, he's going Dame-Studios, and he posts a lot of the stuff, so I guess that's where, I mean, and then, but what we're going to do is we're going to put out the whole album, but with sweaters, so people are going to have to buy the sweater to be able to scan it, and then that's when the album will pop up, because I'm not putting the album on streaming services, so it will only be available through the hoodie. You have to buy the hoodie, and on the hoodie will be the QR code embedded into the hoodie, and then you scan your phone on the QR code on the hoodie and the album pops up. But it's only a one-time listen, and you can't skip tracks. It's all one long track. Awesome print shit.
Okay, so look, definitely once y'all got that in full swing, man, maybe you and Dane can stop by again and we're going to talk about the process behind it.
Yeah, where y'all located?
We do it through Blog Talk.
I'm in North Carolina.
Call in, and I'm in Virginia.
Oh, amazing. Okay,
definitely.
Cool.
So, I mean, you know, definitely, you know, we have you back on. You know, you and Dane can chop it up on the process. And we definitely want to go ahead and, because we don't want Blog Talk cutting us off, because if we go over 2 hours, then they'll snipe us, you know, like from a distance. So we want to make sure that we don't get caught cut off. But once again, Hassan, thank you so much, man. And definitely we'll be in touch with you. Appreciate you.
Man, I really appreciate y'all so much. Thank y'all. God bless y'all. And I had fun.
Definitely, man. I appreciate you so much. Thanks again.
Definitely, man.
Okay. All right.
All right. Later, man.
Amazing.
On that note, we out. Yep.
All right. God bless.